This is a free Off The Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off The Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The LOI Pod on Off The Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off The Ball all season.
Good afternoon. Just for those who are a little bit worried, Steve-O hasn't aged 10 years. It is me filling in for him. He hasn't lost his hair. It's me, as I said. And he's taking the week off. I'm joined, obviously, by Garrett McGlynn, our Derry correspondent, and Owen Heary. Probably, I think people nowadays in the world we live in think football only started maybe 10, 15 years ago. But when it comes to Owen Heary, I often have this discussion, Garrett. I don't know what you think about this, of the best players to play in the last, since the turn of the century. Or maybe I often pick the best team, and Owen Heary's definitely in it. Just the 7 league titles and one of the most decorated players ever. And as much as I hate played against him, and Garrett, you must have went up against him, did you, positionally before in your time?
Played against him and played with him as well. He wasn't bad, funny. He was all right.
No, he was average, but he just won lots of leagues.
I had his career.
Yeah,
good introduction. Thanks very much.
And genuinely mean that. I think when we look at, so many people wax lyrical about these modern day players, and rightly so. Some of them are brilliant, but I think we forget the great rivalries that existed in our league, the great managers. We think we get onto it now almost straight away, the Kilduff and the Bradley sort of roles. But you would have been involved with, say, whether it was Ollie Bourne, whether it was Pat Dole, and all of the mixture of those different bits and pieces, Roddy involved and all of that. What have you made of this week?
Yeah, looking at it, it's I suppose the two managers, it's good in one way for the league. That's been honest. You know, when two managers are having a pop off each other, sort of highlights the league again. And I go back, as you say, Dermot Keighley, Roddy, Ollie Bourne, Pat Dole, and you can name an awful lot of managers and players back then that would have done the same. So I disagree with a bit of the things that's coming out of Rovers camp. I think the tackle, in my opinion, is an okay tackle. He probably caught him with the trailing leg. I can see their point where the whistle is gone and they're more protective that it's a young player that's had to get tackled. But if I was playing, I would have done that tackle, you would have done that tackle, and Garrett would have been on the receiving end of that tackle. You know, so I can see where he's coming from, and then Kilduff has to stick up for his team as well and have to come back with him.
Yeah, I think both have to stick up for each their own sort of point of view, Garrett, don't you? It's just, it is probably a little bit needle, and it's been a good needle in the sense of, because the league is not as competitive as you want it to be, so any little bit of sort of drama has helped.
I think it's a knock-on effect of how Dundalk have unsettled Rovers every time they played them this year, but especially in Tallaght. They've caused chaos. They haven't allowed Shamrock Rovers to control games, and this is just a reaction from that. As Owen says, there's nothing wrong with the tackle. He's got the ball. He's followed through. He's left a bit on him. You used to get four or five of them a game back in the day, and it used to be celebrated by the defenders, and the striker used to go, take your eye. That's just the way that the cookie crumbles. But I think the reaction from Bradley especially, that isn't straight off the back of the tackle. That's a build-up of the lack of control in the game, maybe a wee bit of uncertainty within his own group. Results haven't gone their way in the league. It's the first time that we've probably seen a little bit of cracks from Shamrock Rovers, if we're honest. They've had it easy for the last while.
Yeah, I think for me, I can understand Bradley's point of view in terms of, I think the days of leaving something on somebody are probably gone. Unfortunately, that's the world we live in. And you're right, I'd have done that, or you'd have done that 100%. As you said, Garrett probably wouldn't. Different type of player. But then the sort of to leave him on seemed a little bit strange for me. I know you're going down to 10 men, but, and the player said he was okay. Sometimes you've got to protect your players as well and take them out. But there's no doubt there was a little bit of frustration at the referee as well. I think the referee should have got involved in that instant. And yeah, that's the only thing.
I think it's where this happened as well. It's happened in front of the dugout. And like I said, he's a young player. And the manager's seen a young player getting clattered. And he expects, you know, to stick up for him. You expect your teammates to stick up for him. Of course you would. You were saying leaving a little bit on him. I don't think purposely he left a bit on him. I think it was just a follow through. The player did play on for another 20 minutes after. He asked, was he okay? He was. And then he got body checked by Horgan late on in the game, and that's where he ended up getting a stretcher off. So I can see the frustration from Bradley, you know, but I look at Bradley's bench and there's one or two players on it and past players on it that would have been happy with if that was their teammate doing it. If Stephen Bradley, if that was his defender doing it, if that was Lopez doing it on someone, he would have been happy enough, like, you know. So you can't have it both ways. You have to dish it out sometimes. You know, you're right in saying that the tackle from behind is gone. But to me, he didn't tackle from behind. It was more the side, got the ball, and just a little follow through.
If you're the Dundalk dressing room, Gareth, what do you think of Kilduff's response? I think I personally just thought it was huge.
Brilliant. I thought it was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Kilduff is obviously early in his managerial career. He's up against the marquee manager in the league right now. He's won loads of leagues. He's saying and giving him a butt, and he has given him just as much back. I think it's lovely. It's a breath of fresh air, actually, because you need to be able to stand up for your players, and the reaction he's going to get from the dressing room alone off the back of that. Now, it's an easy one for Kilduff because Bradley's not exactly 100% right. Like, when I heard about it all and then I went and watched the tackle back, I was expecting studs up over the ball, leg breaker. And by the way, Owen makes a good point as well. See the bench, Shamrock Rovers. See if it was that type of tackle I just described. Glenn Cronin wouldn't have been on the pitch. Bradley would have been on the pitch having a proper go. He would have been at the linesman. Bradley didn't even raise his hands going, what's going on, referee? He didn't even do that. So that tells you a lot. But Kilduff's response was absolutely brilliant. He did not miss Bradley at all. And in fairness to Bradley, I think it was off the response of how quite personal Bradley got with Bobby Burns. I thought that was bang out of order.
Yeah, I think to touch on Rovers for a second, on like you obviously have won so many league titles and you've been involved with brilliant squads. Where do you think, like, it feels to me like there's a bit of transition here in this Rovers squad, and that's why I feel they're weakened or certainly opening the door for other teams who aren't capitalising. But heading into Europe, the 3-1 up, where are they at as a team, do you think, or how good are they at the moment?
Yeah, I think you're right in saying there is a transition. Younger players are coming through, and he has to do that because there is certain players coming to the latter end of their career and they won't be able to play at that level consistently for the next few years. But you have to think as well, Rovers have been at the top dominating this league over the last 5 out of 6 years, you know, and that's hard to do. And every week you're asking them to turn up and perform, and they've done that over the last few years. Now they're going Europe. As I said, the Champions League was the holy grail for them. And no team, I think, when it was Dundalk 10 years ago, that they've got to the third round of the Champions League. No team has done it since. And Rovers have been there 6 times to try it. They haven't got over that hurdle. And that'll hurt them because they put in a lot of time, sweat, effort to try getting that Champions League. So now they're back into the Europa Cup. And, you know, you look at them and say they had a great chance of actually progressing the Champions League. Afolavi's chance against Arafat over there. That's the difference. That one chance, if that goes in, you know, they're guaranteed of getting into the third round. So now they had their 3-1 up, 2-goal deficit. They're going away from home again, which they've lost the last 2 games, away from home 2-0 against Arafat and against Florina. But they've also haven't scored against Drogheda in the last league game away from home. So that's a little bit of a worry for me that they can't seem to get the ball in the net when they're playing on their travels over the last month or so. So going over there, I think it's quite important that, one, to keep a tie. Don't go chasing that 4-goal to kill the game. They need to keep it tight and hopefully get a counter-attack. And they're probably set up as a team to counter-attack really, really quickly with the players they have. A lot of experience in the team. And yeah, to me, I think they'll get the job done and they'll move into the next round and all will be forgotten about for this week.
Yeah, Gareth, that's the interesting one for me. Like Corey O'Sullivan, John O'Sullivan, Healy to a point, Young O'Regan, Kovaleski, Michael Noonan, even Afolabi only coming in. All of them changes. Say what you want, Dundalk will unsettle them. They still won. They still, on the night, went 10 points clear.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. They were good. They were really good in the game, and it was a proper game. Like, as Bradley said as well, when you make so many changes, those wee connections aren't there. The right back and the right midfielder wouldn't have played with each other for 5 games in a row, so they're still a little bit hesitant. But to go on one and grind out result against a good Dundalk, now don't get me wrong as well, Dundalk had lost to Ruby and Kenny, so their performance alone deserves a lot of credit. But Shamrock Rovers have been doing this year in, year out. Owen touched on it. The way they can keep coming back from Europe, picking up these good ones, picking up the performances, transitioning these players into the squad, it seems seamless. And I don't think Stephen Bradley, as much as he was wrong about the tackle, doesn't get enough credit for it, because keep changing squads every year and adding two or three, it's really, really difficult to keep the consistency, and he's been able to do it, albeit without any real pressure.
And I think you have to look as well and say that they hadn't played a league game. A lot of these players haven't played a league game in a month until they draw the game.
Yeah.
So the match sharpness, you know, travelling, coming back and forward, not getting game time, that plays a toll on it as well. And you look at the other teams in Europe trying to bounce into the league and get a result and both lose, whereas they come just keep winning games or drawing games, getting the points.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I think Rovers... I think Keith Tracy said they're in third gear, and that seems to be a lot of people's opinion. I think at the moment they might only have three gears.
Yeah, they mightn't be hitting their top level at
the
moment.
They mightn't have top levels, and where all of a sudden you might find in a year's time, Corey O'Sullivan has played 150 games in his two league titles, John O'Sullivan, all of the young Brennan.
It's that down to the league though itself. Like, do you think that they don't have to hit top gear when they're playing certain teams in the league? They can easily go out, you know, put a performance in it and go by it, and then when they're hitting Europe, that's when they're looking to hit their top performance when they're playing the European games.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge for everybody else. We want particularly Pats and Bowes to push them, and that's been the frustration of others. Like, when you consider Dundalk are fourth now and they've been comfortable there, and that's what I'll throw back to you, Gard. Where Dundalk, is it time to be a little bit concerned about them in terms of the current form? Like, fourth seemed like it was on the real chance, but they haven't won in a number of games. Don't look like winning anytime soon. I'm worried for them.
No, I'm not. If you look at the game, don't get me wrong, when they lost to Ruby and Kenny, I thought it was a big game for them against Rovers. Not just to get a result, but a performance-wise. They have been so consistent. I know they haven't won in a while, but their level of performance has been so consistent. And the players themselves, whether they're playing in position or out of position or asked to do a job, it's been incredible what he's done in his first year back in the Premier Division. So I'm not too worried about them. Not the way he's got the energy, the tempo. They'll cause anybody. They could go now and go on a two or three winning streak games. Like that's how little of they need it, where they draw a game, win a game, or lose a game. I'm not worried about them.
Is 9 points Drogheda have on Drogheda enough in second last?
As in Dundalk?
Yeah.
I think, look, at the start of the season, we'd be expecting them to be up there. Mm. No, we wouldn't. We thought they'd be down the bottom, you know. But if you look at the teams, and Gardner's right in saying, like, they beat Bowes and Daly Mount, and I was at that game, and it was the best performance by any team in Daly Mount that day. They've gone to Pats, got a result. Unfortunately, you know, didn't come out and get a result against Rovers the weekend. And Gardner's right, they'll give any team a game. They sort of, that one team where the first 10, 15 minutes of the game, they seem to stutter a little bit in the first 10, 15, but then they just come alive, pressing, closing, chasing. They've got players that can turn games, and you know, with experienced players, they know how to, they're cute and clever at times.
My concern is they were 2-0 up against Waterford, lost, 1-0 up against Sligo, only drew, 1-0 up against Shells, lost, 1-0 up against Pats, only drew. Rovers, they were good. I just feel almost like, because I want them to be okay, just need to get that one or two wins in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, but I have to say, that's the way they play, Vinny. I think you touched on it a couple of weeks ago. They're on the edge, so when you're on the edge, that's going to happen. You're going to swing it one way or the other, but it's on a knife edge, and they're taking loads of chances. I have to say, to me, the two wing-backs now, we've got Burns and Trevor Clark on the right-hand side. Like, if you watch the game, they were all, they're, and in fairness, they killed off all season. Their wing-backs are so far forward. Like, they're not sitting back in a back five. They're like, it's almost like a proper 3-4-3 or 3-4-2-1 or whatever you want to call it. It's really aggressive. And when you're like that and you play like that, and we've been in teams and I've played in teams like that, you're going to leave the back door open at the odd time. But you to me, there's not enough managing enough teams play like that. They're all too reserved and they're all too defensive. Whereas Dundalk are not like that, and they're getting rewarded for it.
Go on. I was going to say, you're right about the two wing-backs. They're too far forward at times, and defensively, to give up them options. And if you look at the goals that Rovers scored, the penalty, that's where Burns should be around covering that when the ball goes over the centre-half. And then again, on the tour goal, when Burns is running back, he plays across with his wrong foot because he's not in a defensive position. That's what causes them goals. So sometimes they might be a little bit more structured in that way and not go gung-ho because they do have talented players going forward.
Gareth, tell them not to start me on back threes. The amount of times teams struggle with a back three, because it's like, that goal's a great example of it, where no one has taken responsibility for Noonan.
Yeah.
He's between Grigowski, I was struggling with his name, and Burns.
Yeah.
And in a back four, I think the centre-half goes and grabs a hold of a centre-forward. I'm going to mark him, and as that ball's clipped in, he's in a good position.
Yeah, and you see it in the Shells game over in Ajax.
Yeah.
Again, no one's taking responsibility for players. Like, if you were playing centre-half and there's a player or a centre-forward on the back of you, and I'm behind you, I'm the one that blocks his run because I can track his run and see him going through.
And the difference, we all, like, Rovers play with back three, but the very, very best team, well drilled over years. Yeah, there's a lot of chopping and changing into back threes all of a sudden, some weeks and not other weeks. And I feel Dundalk are struggling with that. Come here, speaking of Ivory Towers, we have to move on to Derry, Gareth. And I mean, the James McLean thing, I think it's important that for me, I put on the record, I'm one of these people, I grew up in an Ivory Tower in Dublin. Similar to you, a little bit older than you, but we only seen the troubles from afar. They were on the news. We didn't know much about it. And the more football, what football and meeting people from Derry has taught me is they're just brilliant people, but they've had hardship. And believe it or not, James softened my political views because he was the way he explained stuff and the way I understood where he was coming from and knowing the people of Derry, right? So I've used a huge amount of time for him. And I think a lot of Derry people have. And my concern now is he's spoiling that, Gareth. And like, he's really spoiling that with a lot of people. And he's becoming a bit of a cartoon character. And I don't like that.
Right. So Vinny, explain to me what you mean by spoiling it. How's he spoiling it?
Well, okay. I mean, the things like the Joker cap, his Instagram stuff is just doesn't need to happen. Gareth,
right.
Let me just finish the point. In top class dressing rooms, that is in-house stuff. And maybe done it in-house and didn't get the answers. And I know we didn't have social media in our day in terms of being out, but it is not the place to air your door. Derry is a laughing joke at the moment because of some of the stuff that is going on. Being sacked, apparently, or asked to retire, not at training, is at training, Joker hats, all of this stuff. From someone who's a centurion for his country, someone who I've huge respect for, and going, somebody get a hold of him and say, if he was my 18-year-old son, I'd take his phone up for 2 weeks and say, you're not allowed on your phone. The man is a grown man. He needs to be a little bit better than what he's doing.
But hold on a minute. This isn't the first time James has gone and done stuff in the gap. That James has done that throughout his whole career, right? Certain things on the edge, he would turn around and go, oh, James, come on now. That's a bit, you should know better than that, right? That's a side. So Derry knew what they were getting when they signed that. Obviously, James was highlighting the importance of good leadership within the dressing room. The manager hadn't got that and subsequently lost his job, right? So since then, and that only happened when? Last Wednesday? Since that now, the club have decided to say to James, listen, we want you to move on. Now, I'm not au fait to the conversation, so we don't know. So we've got a player, right, as you say, highly decorated, played at the highest level. James, everything James earned, everything James has got, he has earned. He does not understand that he can't work to get something. When he came back, the fairy tale was he was going to win the league. That would, with Derry City, that would have superseded anything that he's ever done in his career, right? That's his dream, right? So within you're telling me a Joker hat now is taken away from him, and as the club just goes, nah, see you later, you're gone. There's got to be a duty of care here. He's just found out from a consultant that he's advised to retire. His hip is obviously in bad way. So the response by the club is to turn around and go, oh, by the way, we want you to leave your club as well, although you have a 2-year contract. Where is the duty of care to go to the player and say, listen, you're highly valuable to us. There was a meet and greet at the weekend, right? Or during the week here for the club. James was the star attraction. Hundreds of kids. James stayed back for an hour and a half, signing jerseys, face of the club. James McLean is the face of the club now. The manager didn't want to do it. He didn't want to be the face of the club, didn't want to do the media stuff, didn't want to live in the town. They have to get somebody else in. But they can't just turn around and dismiss James McLean. He's a 37-year-old player that has been told he possibly has to retire. Where's the empathy? Where's the emotional support for him to be able to say, right, we'll work with you, James, here. What do you need from us? Let's try and get through this. And also, sorry, Owen, another thing. So he won the league. The second option is they lift a trophy with Derry City. Why not say to James, listen, let's see how that happens at the end of the season. Let's try and get an FA Cup out of this. Let's get a trophy in your Derry jersey to end an unbelievable career. Then we'll sit down, see where the hip is and see what you want to do and come to some sort of amicable decision. Instead, I talked about it last week in the podcast. It's a nuclear option again. Bad decision. PR nightmare from the club.
Yeah, look, the standard player contracts were brought in 2006. So I was part of that when they came in. And there's a reason why they were brought in. You can't just say to a player, good luck. You know, that's like someone getting injured in a game and then say, well, I don't really want him now and I'll try to get him out. That's a no-no. And the club shouldn't come out and say that they want them to terminate the contract or whatever it may be, retire. They're not in that position. There should be negotiations behind closed doors. And if they do come to an agreement, then it's different. James McLean, you know, I love James McLean because he lives his life the way he plays. Yeah. It's always on the edge. Should he have come out and said what he said? Possibly not. But I've been in dressing rooms and I was in a dressing room with Shells where the players were split. And so I know what it's like. And I lost the league title because of that. There was a player who wouldn't pass to another player, wouldn't go for free kicks. And it's a horrible experience. And I've also been in a dressing room where a manager just didn't do anything. He was a bully to younger players and things like that. And that really frustrated him. But I confronted the manager on it. You know, he ended up going then later on and we went on and won two leagues. So what James is now, the manager is gone. For him, for me, I would think is to try to get back playing and try to get Derry into that fourth position and then justify everything that's gone on next year by challenging for a league if he's fit and ready to go. I mean, if Derry do win the league, he'd be a hero. And he is a hero up there, and rightly so. And I do think he has a lot to offer the game. If the club, in any sense, I would keep him in the club and say, OK, look, you're not fit enough to play, but we'll give you a little coaching role with the kids, you know, help them develop. Imagine an Irish international coming down and coaching your team. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, but does it? So, for example, I completely agree. The standard players' contract, they can't do it, and rightly so,
since then,
and deservedly so. And I think one of the things the PFAOI don't get enough credit for is
time, and the likes of Steve McGuinness, they've tweaked it. Yeah. You know, Cahooley, they've really brought it on leaps and bounds.
Absolutely, and I think that's important. And so James is protected in that sense. It's not just a cap, Gareth, I don't think. I think it's more than that. There's been lots of little things. Having a go of your manager on social media. But you wonder then, where's the senior player or senior players in the Derry dressing room? Because there's definitely a split.
But those senior players,
well, his brother's not
going to
go against them. I'm trying to play devil advocate for the club. It's difficult for a club's point of view. You have to kill the noise eventually.
But some players might be happy that he's coming out and saying that because... So, like, and I've been in dressing room, and gotta remember, there's players that really experience pros that won't say anything. They're afraid to open them out, and they'll go to the likes of myself, the likes of yourself, and say, "Look, will you say this?" And there's probably certain players in there that are asking James to come out and say these things, and he feels obligated because he's the senior pro. He's come from a very high professional level, and if things aren't right at Derry, and they're not hitting that level, then I think he has a right to say it.
Do you think there's some players in the dressing room also glad he's not in the dressing room?
No, I'd say they'd rather him in the dressing room. Mm. I think he's a player's player. Yeah. He has come out 100%. And he's backed the players. He's gone around and said this has nothing to do with the players.
So, Gareth, where's the leadership in the club in this? Because it's like, is this a Mark Connolly decision, do you think? Is it above his head?
This has been going on for a while, Vinny. I don't want to say too much. This has been going on for a while. The way James McLean delivered what he wanted to say about the manager, that had been festering through the changing room. They just probably didn't have the leader there to say it. And James obviously said it in the wrong way. That should have been done properly. So that he'll probably take that in the chin. But leadership within the club, they're struggling at the moment. The brand of the club is struggling. Director of football, Mark Connolly, was given the role. He'd only finished playing. It's his first time doing such a role. He's no corporate experience. It's a tough gig. Then he's been asked to step into the manager's role. There's a massive Niall McGinn's now been added to the club in a coaching capacity in the academy. So they're getting stuff in place, but there's a massive lack of leadership. There's a massive lack of doing things the right way. And I've been talking about it for 18 months.
Yeah. So the challenge we have is it's a Wednesday afternoon. We're recording this pod. My challenge with it is, I don't know what the next 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours in James McLean's life and what the club is going to bring to this. Do you know what I mean? Whether there's another post on the way from him, whether there's another falling out with somebody, whether... And sometimes, you go back to Kilduff. What Kilduff has been brilliant at is I worked in the middle of a circus. Okay, I tried to control it and I couldn't. And ultimately I failed to control the noise and the hurlers on the ditch, and the media loved it. They loved it. They had nothing else to be doing, but our press conference in Dundalk were busier than anywhere else. I just worry that it's time for the noise to go away from Derry. And you have a bit of an advantage because most of the Dublin media aren't going up there 4 or 5 days a week. Bit of an advantage. I know it's a bit of a goldfish bowl in terms of the local newspapers, local radio stations, but it needs to be quietened down. And I just hope James does that for his good as well.
Do you think it would have been quite, and I thought the club have come out now and said about that he's retiring or terminating his contract, whatever it may be. Like, everything was quiet.
It's just another bad decision following another bad decision.
The club didn't need to come out and say things like that. Just need to get on with it, speak to him behind closed doors and say, look, you know, curb your social media, if so to speak, and talk to him about if they wanted him to retire.
Let's see how Derry plays out, Gareth. I'll put you that way. Speaking of the next clubs, which is your home club? Are you a Bowes man or a Shells man?
Both. Don't try to catch me on that.
Sitting on the fence there.
I grew up following Bowes.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I'm a Carbery lad, so I grew up. That was the first club I would have gone to see. And then I signed for Shells. And I probably wouldn't have left Shells only for the money went and Ollie Bourne that time, you know, the contracts and things like that. So, yeah, it went to Bowes, which is my local club.
So Gareth, your first results would be Derry, yeah? When you were checking results, if you weren't able to be at a game, yours would be...
Yeah, everybody was playing for Shells, I'd have a look at Bowes, and Bowes have a look at Shells, of course. Yeah, and now I look at both.
So where are Shells now?
Well, defensively being very, very poor, in my opinion. I watched them there the weekend against Pats, and you look at set pieces again, it beggars belief. And we've talked about wing-backs going forward. You look at James Brown's goal to tap in because the wing-back's not coming back, tracking the runners. Same in Europe, they played 7 across the back at times, and it just gave up so much early in front of the midfields. I do think they've got talented players going forward, but you really need to sort out defensively. I mean, they've conceded more goals than they have in the last 2 years this year. Like, so it's a worry for me that they're not tightening up on them, especially those set pieces. The corners, they're really between zonal marking, which I don't agree with. They're just getting caught out completely. They're putting 11 players in the box and still getting caught out. Mm. So at the moment, they're way off the pace. But can they get forward? Definitely. I think they could if they can get a run together.
Where's that? Like, that's the challenge. So if they lose the Ajax, which we expect them to do, right?
Like, you're asking Ajax, you're asking Shells basically to score 3 goals without a reply for them to get through. Mm. And looking at them the other day against Pats,
so that was my point. So and again, a slightly different view, but I ask you, like, John Russell then, whether it's Ajax or not, still played 8, lost 7.
Yeah.
Do the Shells fans start to go, oh, what's going on here? Or the... Like, obviously deserves a bit more time, don't get me wrong, I'm saying, at what stage do they have to go and get after them? Do you have to finish at Dundalk? Or would you be worried of the league table going the other way? Because I would if I was a Shells fan. I'd be a bit worried about the league table going the other way.
I think for John Russell, look, it's a massive club. It really is a massive club. Like, and it's different pressures than what he had at
Sligo. So you managed Sligo and Shells. That's why it's interesting.
Yeah, it's a much different pressure.
Right.
Because of the fact that Shells, like, if you're playing Bowes, Rovers and Pats, one after another, you're expected to win those 3. When you're at Sligo, you could lose those 3 and no one bats an eyelid. So it's a different pressure, you know. And Shells fans will be expecting that they do have a go against Ajax, but they're expecting to hit that 4th spot at least. And they had a good run last year that made them finish higher up the table. But this year, for John, I just think, you know, he needs a steady ship, stop them conceding goals, try to get up and finish 4th, and then let them have a go at it next year and see how he fares.
So they're on 34 points and draw in the playoff position on 28. Now there is... We obviously know 4 teams in between there, or Derry, Galway,
would get dragged down.
I think so.
They're a much better team,
but you got to win eventually.
You have to win. That's the results business, you know. And like you said, John has come from a team where they've only won 5 games or something at the time, and now he's gone into a team that expects to win. Kerry results in the cup, it's a nightmare start for him, but you can forgive him because he's only in the door. Gets a great win in Europe, and then to get beaten away against 10 men, you know, you had to realise that they were 1-0 up against 10 men and get beaten again. And then get beaten against Pats, beaten against Waterford.
And the next game is Shamrock Rovers.
And the next one is a big one against Rovers. Mm. And he has to win those games. He has to win the Rovers game, in my opinion, to go up the table, but also to take the pressure off himself and say, I can do this job.
Gary, talk to me about St. Pat's and your old manager, Stephen Kenny.
Well, it was a mad game. I mean, everybody will talk about the ref and the red cards and stuff like that, but I couldn't believe how dangerous Pats looked throughout the game. I mean, to me, they could have won 4 or 5. Don't get me wrong. Shells at the crossbar, at the post as well. I thought Pats looked really dangerous. 40% possession without Palmer, Elbazetti, Mata, Levy as well. I mean, I thought it was a great result for them. It hadn't been going well. We talked about it last week. It hadn't been going well. And I'll go back to the wingbacks again. The two wingbacks for me, James Brown and McClelland, were excellent. Again, he's back to that aggressive, I don't care. I don't care that it's Shelburne. It's almost the confidence, Stephen Kenny, that I was managed under and that we've seen in the years gone by before he got the Ireland job. I mean, put it this way, Edmondson missed two sitters when he came on. Anthony, how do you pronounce his last name? Olisana?
Yeah, I'm glad
you guys scored.
Yeah. Go on.
Yeah. He missed a one-on-one.
Yeah. I'm on the unhairy fence between Bowles and Bells.
Yeah.
No, 100%. He missed a one-on-one. Like, Pats could have won very, very comfortable. And Shells just didn't have a threat. I liked Sheridan when he came on. I mean, if they were to get Palmer, Elbazetti, and Levy back and Mata back, and I know that's fucking wishful thinking, but they could give it a push. They really could if Rovers were to wobble. They looked the most consistent out of them in both.
That's only their third Dublin Derby win out of 9 games. Mm. Pats this year. Like, and they haven't won 3 games in a row.
Did you see the game?
Yeah, I watched it. Yeah.
So I would have a different view than Gareth. I thought at times, the first half, very, very good.
Shells could have easily got something out of that game.
I think if Shells got the equaliser or the crossbar, you'd expect them to go on almost and win.
I always look at Pats, and to me, they give up a lot of chances in games. I know they have the best defensive record, but they do, but between bad finishing and the keeper, and I'm pulling off some good saves, I do think they give up a lot of chances in games. And look against Dundalk, where they dominate the first 10, 15 minutes, didn't score, and then they go backwards and Dundalk score. And I do think they concede a lot of areas in the pitch, especially entries into the box. But yeah, you're right in saying, I think if Shells had got the second goal the other day, they would have been the possible ones that might have gone on and won it. Now, don't get me wrong, I think Forrester makes a big difference when he plays in the team, and that's shown. Like, he hits a shot off the crossbar or off the post and Brown comes in and finishes it. So he does have a talented squad. But for me, Pats, you never see them win the league. That's being honest. Like, you look at them, say, great squad, but do I see them challenging? Like, they're 7 points off Rovers, and Rovers haven't even hit Top Gear. Let's be honest, like, you know. And then you look at the results that they've been getting the last 6 games, like drawing with Dundalk, Waterford. You know, they're games that they need to win, where they should have been closing the gap on the leaders by far.
Gareth, talk to me about the gaffer's comments after.
He wasn't talking about me, he was talking about you, lad.
I'm not sure it was just me, but I mean, like, you've seen him have rants before. Like, where did, like, what?
Listen,
genuinely, I'm open, like, I'm open for criticism on it. I'm like,
listen, the best managers in Ireland in the world are very, very good at dictating the narrative. And that's all that he's doing. He understands, like Owen says, he needs time to build a squad. And the only way he can do that is by biding time and coming out with stats like he did. And he's 100% right. He needs time. He can't just turn up the way the league is now. It was completely different to when he won it previously. The league is way more stronger. Shamrock Rovers have a far more stranglehold on the league than anybody else has ever had in a long, long time. So wrangling that away from Shamrock Rovers isn't a one season, isn't a two season job. And this is why I keep saying about Derry City's nuclear decisions, always big decisions. You need to go back to basics and build it from the bottom up again. That's the only way that I believe that you challenge Shamrock Rovers consistently. And St. Pat's and Bowes, to me, and Shells, to be honest with you, I give them credit as well. It hasn't worked out with Duffer or O'Brien. They have been doing bits and pieces off the back of the recruitment drive that I really like, and it's going to give them a half chance. But Stephen Kenny needs time. I mean, to turn around and say he should be winning the league or he should be closer to Shamrock Rovers, I think it's a bit much.
Oh, you know what's a pet hate of mine is when they win one game and they're jumping and celebrating as if they won a league. That between managers and players doing that after matches is a pet hate of mine. You know, you're watching them, they hadn't won in 4 games, beat Shells, and all of a sudden they're jumping to the crowd.
Was there a Dublin Derby element to that?
No, come here, if you win your game, you clap the supporters by all means, but you walk off, you need to be thinking, right, we have Rovers in the Cup this week, and then we're back to league basis, and you have to go up the table.
Should they be closer to Rovers?
I definitely think they should be, with the squad they have, yeah, definitely. And as I said, it's to me, it was when the pressure was on them to win those games, that's where they dropped off. You know, as I said, you look, Waterford won all away. After that, then you have Dundalk and you have Derry and Drogheda won all with both of those teams. And you can forgive them against Derry because Derry are a good side, but you really had to be taking the 3 points against Dundalk and the 3 points against Waterford. And they would have been right on the coast. You probably would have overtaken Rovers because Rovers hadn't played a league game at that stage. They would have been top of the table, but they seemed, when the pressure was on them, they just couldn't cope with it.
Yeah, I've struggled with the gaffer's comments, Gareth, because I think, and I honestly don't know that they were aimed at, say, me. There has been other articles and there's other people with different agendas, so-called agendas, that have been talking about Pats. There is a narrative there that they should be closer to Rovers. And I think the only reason I certainly wouldn't get into a war of words with them, but one thing I would say is that we, because by all accounts, Owen Cozier said he was alluding to me in it, so therefore I presume Owen has heard that from somebody, or else Owen's putting 2-2 together, come a five. But I think I actually found it a little bit, I may as well say, a little bit offensive, right? Because, and both of you know this, when, and you'd know more, Gareth, when you work for Stephen, you have to be so loyal to him. You have to go to war. Like, once I'm involved with your team, I understand why people think I'm Dundalk true and true, because when you're with a club, you go to war for them. That club is all that matters. You were the same when you were Shells. We remember Stewie's great rant and all of that stuff, because it was all about your team. So that loyalty I would have, and that to the core, still there. And I want Pats to win the league. And for Stephen, the fact that we're not best bud and buzzy buddies anymore. But in 2008, the end of 2018, start of 19, he decided to move on his football career. And he left me behind. I was okay with that. Part of me was hurt, but I'm okay with that. Don't hold any grudge to that. But he then went and made decisions around getting his life and his staff and all of that stuff to make him better. And I have to make a couple of decisions as well, which one of them is being honest when I see something. And I can stand in front of him, look him in the face and go, I think the team, Pats, don't play your way enough. The Dundalk's a great example, the back five, two sitting midfield. That's seven defensive-minded players, because two wing-backs were defenders. And I'm going, you're more of an attacking coach than what I'm looking at. So I could stand there. So that's not personal. That's not a personal vendetta. I've no vendetta against the man. Vanton, I've said it before, he's like a big brother. Just don't happen to be speaking to me big brother that much. That's the way it is. So I was a little bit offended by it, but and he'd hate this, so I shouldn't even say it, but if it does anything but stokes a bit of fire in his belly, great. Because I do want Pats to at least make a title race out of this. They're good enough. And as I said, I think Rovers only have three gears at the moment. So that's just my rant on it, for what it's worth.
But I honestly think you being honest, like you said, is the best policy. And me and Garrett played in the same dressing room, and we used to say to each other and say to the players that I would rather a player come to me and say, you're not at it today. You know, whereas you have players that will go to you, you're brilliant. And then they go over to Garrett and say, he's been brutal today. You know, and that's what you don't want. You want someone that's going to be out straight, tell you the way it is. And that, to me, is what you're doing with him, because you know him better than anyone. Probably know him. I know Garrett has played under him, but you know him probably the best out of the three of us here anyway, because you've played with him played under him, you've worked with him for a long, long time. So you're giving that honest opinion to him. He mightn't accept it, he mightn't agree with it, but at least you're being honest. And that's something that you have to be upfront. And that's the way I would look at it, coming from a player's point of view. I'd rather that honesty.
I've two best mates in life, right? Barry Ferguson, Alan Murphy. So most ever sent off player for Longford Town. The top three is the three of us in different orders. You can work out yourself. But I remember having a right go off Alan Murphy, and he hit me punch. Now, I know the days of that are gone, but a bit of honesty in the change room, there's nothing wrong with
it. No, I think you have to be. You have to be honest with your teammates, and straight up. Like, you know, and we have all had rows with teammates in dressing rooms. And, you know, I remember when Garrett and the lads actually signed for Bowes, I was going around kicking a few of them, and a few of them were injured. They had to pull me and say, look, you need to calm down. And they were right, like, you know, because...
Well, he was a windy fellow, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was on my side that time. He was grand. But you do have to be told to your face, like, as much as you think, oh, I just want to prove a point, You had to be top of the ball back.
Do you think, lads, it's interesting that, right, Owen, so you said, Vinny, you touched on the loyalty side, Owen, you said about the whole celebrating after a win and stuff like that. Is these sort of personalities missing in the dressing room now? So are these, when we keep talking about leadership, and you probably have to go back to Pico Lopez, the responsibility he has in that dressing room and how he has guided that club and that team to so many successes. Is it hard to get those type of players again? There's Will Fitzgerald, was highly sought after from Sligo. To me, he would be one of those standard setters, 8.5, 9 out of 10 every week.
I think you look at where Lopez came from.
These type of players.
You look where what team Lopez was in. He was in the Bowles team where you had me, Jason Bourne, Glenn Crow, Glenn Crone. You had a lot of experienced players around him. Himself, Keith Buckley, Forrester was there. And then you look at those players, how they've moulded into really good professional players. And I think it rubs off now. The players that I grew up with, Paul Doolan, you know, Pat Scully, yeah. Deco Gagan, you know, all those players, that would have rubbed off on me as well. And that moulds you, I think. And that's why Rovers are over the air. So when they're bringing in these young players now, they're looking at Lopez and say, I want to do what he's done. They're looking at, you know, Graham Bourke. They're looking at Jack Bourne. They're looking at them players and saying, that's where I want to be, having 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 league medals in my pocket. And they're looking at them, and that's the role models for them.
Yeah, do you know, when you play a five-a-side in training, the fella that's happy to lose one of them, he ain't going to win you a league title.
No. And I remember that lad coming back from Leeds was like that. He had a 4-year contract at Leeds, and he came back to Wolves at Shells, and he just didn't want to do the running. Yeah. He didn't want to do anything, and you knew straight there and then, like, he's not going to be part of this.
The amount of times I've done a counselling session, it wasn't a counselling session, it's a title, with Richie Towle after losing the five-a-side.
Yeah.
But there's a reason he got to where he got to. There's a reason why Brighton,
you don't like
Lewis. There's a reason why Brighton went to Premiership, didn't release him, kept him around. Mm. There's a reason why he got 30-odd goals. Because there's a bit of selfishness, but all the top players have that. It's that fight and that.
Yeah, and I think, Gary, you would have seen that when you came to Bowles. Like, the training sessions were really, really intense. No one wanted to lose. Like, it was like 100%. Bragging rights after training that. We didn't
come here, speaking of winner, Gareth, go back. It sounds like I know what I'm doing here, linking to somebody. But Graham Coughlin, who... Can I say I told you so? Graham Coughlin, what a job he's doing at Waterford, by the way.
Unbelievable. If you look at their third in the since he's come into the league, they're third. They have been unbelievable. And I tell you what as well, he's done it his way. Like, he came in very early on, like we talked about, and he said, this is the standard. He obviously said it within the dressing room, but then he came out to the media and he says, I'm going to use the media as a channel for everybody in the club, all the players, because they do listen to all this stuff, and I'm going to say, this is the bottom, this is the basic standard that I'm going to look for. So anybody not willing to do it, see you later. And he was able to do that. But they're able to win different ways now as well. They're able to win, defenders are scoring, wing-backs are scoring and assisting. He's not reliant on the two boys up the front. The long throws again in the last match were the highlights is just it seemed like a long throw drawing session. It was just long throw after long throw after long throw, and Bowes just couldn't, the keeper just couldn't deal with it, and the defenders just couldn't deal with it.
He's taking the pressure off me on my Kev Doherty, isn't he, for being like sort of route one.
Yeah, and you know what, it's working for him. I mean, there's different ways to win games. Two long throws and a set piece he scored off against Bowes. If you look at a set piece, Harry Fawn has his back turned to the ball, but since he's gone in, he's 22 points out of 36. I'm not going to count the Pats the fourth game because he's only in the door. But after that, he's just like he's took Waterford from bottom of the table and pushed them into a really good position. And they're a team at the moment.
Could they win an FAI Cup on?
They could. Yeah, I definitely think they could. They're a team that no one wants to play at the moment because they're in the ascendancy. You can see they're well structured organisation. And that's what he's brought, I think, from his own personal playing career. He was a defender where he's like, this is what we need to stop. We need to stop the goals going in. We have good attackers with Almond and Lonigan up front, so we know we can get goals, but we need to stop it the other way. And if you think of the games that they play with Derry 2-0, you know, teams that expect to win them and they just keep running out
or
results.
2-0 away in Oriel Park and winning 3-2.
I think the big turning point was when they beat Sligo 4-0.
Yeah,
you know, that really turned the whole season for them, and they're an enjoyable team to watch. But I watched them in the Daily Mount, and they look like a team that were not going to say unfit, but you weren't at the level that you want them to be. And since he's gone in, he's just transformed them. And like I said, they're not a team that you want to be playing at this present time.
Gareth, how much is Tommy Lonergan worth to Derry now?
he's flying. Anytime he goes into the box, he seems to be there. And then, I mean, having Ammon there beside him as well must have been a massive help, because he is lethal as well. You give him half a chance and he scored as well. But I mean, he they'll be doing well to keep hold of him to come to the end of the season. He's flying and scoring all types of goals as well. There's tap-ins there, there's headers, there's penalties. He's a joy to watch. And I tell you what, he's an athlete, and he's got, like, to Owen's point as well, he's actually got fitter. He wasn't always doing the doggy work under the previous two managers, but he's doing it now. And again, that's just a standard thing. The manager's just come in, Coughlin, and just gone, listen, I know you're a good player, but I don't care. Your talent is only a fraction of what I need, Odie. I need the other 90% pumping as well, and that's working hard.
What? Why do fellas, when they get fitter, look a little bit taller on? Do you ever notice that? Do you
look slimmer.
Look yeah. like he's more of a threat in the air and stuff.
Yeah, Garrett looked like 6'4" yeah. when he was fit.
Once every swat. Come here, and then the other one is, like, yes, bringing in someone from the outside. But I think I felt Graham was a different type of appointment because he was working at the lower levels in English football. But what Sligo have done and Darren Pearce felt like, no, mistake, written all over it. And my fear is, because you know the club from working down there, if they do go down, this is the first time I'd say they're probably not favourites to bounce back up.
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest with you. I was asked that question the other day, and you're looking saying, who in the first division, apart from maybe UCD, would be the ones that could challenge them if they keep that squad together and maybe add one or two to it? Like, they have an experienced manager come in.
Well, Bray are really on the improvement at the moment. Cove, we've seen signs of them.
I've been in that fourth division. There is a graveyard, like, the best of times. But you're looking and saying, Sligo would probably be the most equipped team to bounce straight back up with a full-time football and things like that compared to the rest. If they don't get it in the first year, it will be a real struggle to get back up. And we've seen that with Shells over the years. So, you know, it depends on who they're ready to bring in and who they're ready to keep. But to be honest with you, I do think they could be the club that will go down this year.
Garrett, is the North West Derby over?
Yeah, it's just such a shame. I mean, you look at the where Finn Harps are at the minute in the First Division. You look at Sligo, look at bottom of the Premier Division. It's not what we need in the North West. We need competition. We need teams. We need derbies. We need big crowds. Proper support. It's not looking good for them. I can't see them. I can't see them getting out of it. And they looked toothless as well in the last match. They didn't even look like creating chances. They didn't look like scoring. But if it hadn't been for Gareth McElroy with his display, it could have been much, much worse. So it's not looking good.
Yeah, and the conceding goal is in 95th minute, 94th minute, which is, as you know, if you're down the bottom, that's the
has to be a challenge for the manager coming in who doesn't know the league. So he's every week is a new challenge, and he's ultimately the decision maker, and he just doesn't know the teams well enough at the moment. All the video analysis you can do, just chasing
the tail. Compared, you know, and like I said about Waterford, the 4-0 win against them turned Waterford's season around. It's done the opposite for Sligo. Once they got beaten 4-0 by a team that was below them, that sort of killed them.
Something else, Garrett, you wouldn't have seen. Dublin today is rammed. City Centre Dublin is rammed with Leeds jersey. Crow Park is going to be completely in Leeds. I didn't see as many United as Leeds. It looks like all the Leeds fans are going to the Camden. That's what it looks like, to be honest with you. But, like, I have a view on it. Should we be really concerned by these games getting eight? Like, on 6,500 people only seeing Bowles playing Talladue today. Nothing else on in your European game. I was so disappointed with that number.
Yeah, I think, look, if you're United or Leeds supporter, you're going to go to these games regardless of whether you make it over to England or whether you're watching them on telly or here. League of Ireland supporters will always go out and support the league. You know, it is disappointing that there was only 6,000. Maybe the fact that it was people are in work or going to couldn't get to the game, or maybe the fact they're keeping the money to go and travel away. Yeah. But it is disappointing. Is the novelty wearing off at the teams in Europe that we're playing so many European games? Is an expectation that we get through? Who are we going to get in the next round? These games, come here, it's just to generate money for the likes of United, for Leeds. I think it's a selling jersey exercise. We will get to see the players perform, not to the level that you think they will, because it's not going to be competitive. You'll probably have a few first-teamers playing for the first 45, 50 minutes, and then it's all the younger players coming out making their debut for them. But look, we'll all have an interest in it just to see the players that are coming through at both clubs.
I got my dad 2 tickets anyway. He's a massive Leeds fan. The amount of, so what my view is that we have to get down off our high horse and be worried about people going to England. We need to sort of, in one sense, try and tag along with that and just be just okay with it. Yeah, yeah. It's the nonsense of giving out about it. Now, there's nonsense of giving out about League of Ireland people giving out about. They're entitled to it as well. It swings both ways, I think. And if people want to go and watch the game, best of luck to them.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if you want to go and watch a game of golf, if you want to go, just go enjoy. Like, it's sport is there to be enjoyed by everyone, regardless of whether it's football in Croke Park or if a Gaelic match, hurling match, or whatever it may be. Go and enjoy the occasion, and then, you know, you can still go down and support your League of Ireland team.
Gareth, we're nearly done. My job of filling in for Steve-O is probably never going to happen again now. But the looks I'm getting in the booth inside. So I'll ask you, what's the next 24 hours or 48 hours in Derry going to look like, do you think?
God knows. I just hope it doesn't just go drastic and James ends up going off and it ends up in a legal battle and all that nonsense. That is the worst case scenario. I think they've got to sit down, get the common ground. There is common ground there. He's under contract. He's an asset to the club. He wants to lift a trophy in a Derry jersey. Let the man have the opportunity to do that. I don't know how bad his hip is, whether at the end of the season make the assessment, but give him an opportunity to drive the team to an FAA Cup final, because it looks as if that's going to be the only way of qualifying for Europe. I don't think Mark Conley or a new manager coming in can turn around the current league campaign. I think it'll be too difficult. Go on, give him a chance, sit down, give him a kiss, give him some love, and get back to trying winning games.
Last quick topic, because I've forgotten about it. Referees had a bad weekend last week, didn't they?
Yeah, there was. And, you know, Stephen giving out about, obviously, Rob Harvey. And we've seen Rob make a few mistakes through the course of a few years. And the one in Daly Mount sticks out to me, where Derry, I think it was Riley, got sent off with two yellow cards. Second one's not a yellow card because it was the Bowles player to tackle him. And then we've seen Hickey catching the ball and he doesn't do anything for that one. So it is difficult, but it's difficult for referees. We'll always scrutinise.
Before I forget, it was the penalty decision wasn't a red card, was it? Dundalk's one. Where
I'm trying to think of that
Grace pulls him back from behind.
No, it would have been a harsh red card.
Should have been yellow?
Yeah, quite possibly.
Isn't it, for Kilduff? You're on the edge when you're in yellow. Yeah,
I can see where Kilduff would want that as a red card. You know, but I don't think the player was in full control of the ball. It was bouncing around and it was more sloppiness than anything else. As soon as he feels the
Defenders Union, wise up, it's a red card.
No, right, never. Lads, before I get battered here, I can see my good friend Emma as well now is at the joint debut and she's giving me the dagger eyes. So it's time to get myself out of here, get the podcast done, get it up online. Don't worry about Steve. Where's Ben? The last time I seen Ben, by the way, I heard from him was in Amsterdam. He could be still there, I'm just saying. He's still there. Good possibility Ben is still in Amsterdam. So, look, thanks, Alan, for coming in. I say it one more time, right? Because people don't say this enough. And I hate playing against you, but you're in my top six League of Ireland players the last 25 years.
That. Thanks, Vinny. Drop you the money outside.
Top six. You're probably sixth. Yeah, Kevin Hunt's still number one. That's fair show.
Everyone's entitled to their opinion.
All right, fair enough. All right, he split my eye open as well, so that's why I know I'm not biased. Right, that's it. Steve-O will hopefully be back next week because this pressure has got to me now and I've had enough, so it's time to sign off. Gareth, chat to you next week. And
good job, Johnny.
It's a big week in the FAI Cup and Rovers and Pats is obviously a huge, huge game. I think Pats have to win that, don't they? Have to win.
For to get a trophy, Gareth's saying about Derry. You know, you have to win that to get the trophy.
It's a huge game. And as I said, my outside shout is now Waterford. But having said that, I'm going to tip Bowles to win the FAI Cup. I'm going to tip Rovers to continue to win the league by 10 points.
That's what that's called.
Thanks very much, man. It's been emotional. We move on. Thanks.
Cheers.
The Yellow iPod. On Off the Ball, catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off the Ball all season.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.